Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode. Voices, but this may be all I say all podcast.
The worst part is no one made you go, oh, I'll intro it. No, we know no, how you no, say
I'll
it.
I'll just run it. It's just, this is just passion. If I struggle, I'll get there today. But this is just determination and passion. No, I'm going to continue. In the face of adversity, you got to persevere. So, welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of them late nights and them wet wipes. You know who this is. You know who I be. I'm one of your co-hosts, Michael Akadiri. And
oh my God.
To the left, I'm joined by...
Oh, my God. So I see the chocolate bar there. RC Bill pays submission. Who's that? That's me. Me is Darren G.
And to the far left, the ones in the visuals, you'll see that we've got a very, very special guest. This man is not only a comedian. This man is not only a podcaster. This man is not only from the UK's second city of Birmingham.
He, and the goddamn sugar.
Hey, come on. Sugar, Joseph Bingham.
Jump off Joe Beezing.
Thank you. I didn't know I was getting a nice intro like that.
Yeah,
that was nice.
Customary.
That's better than most MCs around this country bring me.
What do you usually get?
Bingley.
Yeah, I've had all sorts. Yeah. The worst one was when I first started and people would be like, oh, this guy's one for the ladies. No mention of anything else. They just wheel me out. And then women would shout at me.
And the thing is, though, your material isn't even like... You're not even like a flirty act on stage. It's just, I'm just here just going to tell
you. Yeah, it's quite dour, if anything, my material.
That's the one for the ladies. That's crazy.
Yeah, like, it's not like... I don't even give them an idea that there's a chance.
I know what you mean. No, I've had that. I think I had that weekend, actually. Because the MC... she's lesbian and she made the whole joke about before I come on stage going like, oh, like, you could turn me. So I was like, you lady, you're going to enjoy him. I promise you, you're going to enjoy him. And I came on just start chatting shit about anything.
Yeah.
And just like, but it's just like, I wish I had it in the bag to like maybe pull out if it was.
It'll be a bit flirtatious.
You know, like comedians, sometimes like a hen do and stuff.
Yeah.
All I've got to say is like, who's getting married? Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's the level of flirting I've got from the stage, off the stage. Just like, yeah. Well, good luck.
I just
back to the set.
I just don't think we're allowed to do it in this country. I remember, it was an American who told me. It was this guy, and his background was producing like reality shows, like Real Housewives and all that stuff.
Right.
And Matt Rife was like starting to blow up like post COVID, and I don't really go in about a year.
Yeah.
And this producer's like, "Oh, have you heard of Matt Rife? You should do what he does." And I just laughed and was like, "Yeah, but we're British. Like the Americans love all that, don't they?
That level of confidence.
Yeah, they love it because it's seen as confidence.
Yeah, it would be so seedy.
Yeah, over here they'd just be like, you are the most arrogant person. I couldn't buy into it.
You'd definitely be in the WhatsApp group.
100%.
You would be booked by like female comics. There'd be female comics that refuse to be in the same bit as you. you just came on stage and led on the back wall.
Just one eyebrow up.
So you get ladies... What you guys do? What are you doing tonight?
You know what I mean?
I'm trying to think of who's the closest act there is to that. Was it Brand before he got caught out of all this rubbish?
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
It was probably closest act to being like overly Val Venus on stage, like proper flirty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it'll run in this country. I think if you show too much, which is a bizarre thing really for like what we do.
Mm. That's true.
Unless you're a character who's very like low status and that. The expectation is that you're very confident because you're public speaking.
Yeah.
But too much confidence and the British want to bring you down. They want to see you not thrive.
Yeah. That's why probably some of the most successful stand-ups are like these beta males who are like nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The geeky guys at school and stuff like that. It's almost like the British public like that because it fits into that being humble, knowing your place.
Yeah.
That sort of stereotype.
It's humility. It's like, you can't. You have to convince us that you're not actually better than us.
Mm-hmm.
So even though these people are multi-millionaires,
oh yeah, it has to be some sort of like level.
Not look like a multi-millionaire, not sound like a multi-millionaire, have insecurities. You come on stage, it's just like, my life is fucking sick.
Yeah.
I've seen American acts do that. Gervais has done it a little bit, where he goes, well, I'm a millionaire. And so I think it's, I guess his audience, right? But I imagine a lot of people, that would be part of the reason why they don't like him.
I think it will change, though, because I always think that we're about 20, 30 years behind the States with stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And you look back to like the late 80s, early 90s,
yeah,
and they had people like Seinfeld and that, where his whole thing was like, oh, woe is me, I'm always the butt of the joke, and people like that were huge.
Yeah.
And now it is almost back to people like Andrew Schultz, Tony Hinchcliffe getting loads of shit at the minute for the Trump thing. Like, they've gone back to more like, I am better than you, that's why you've paid to come and see me.
Yeah.
So it might change, or maybe the general British misery We'll just keep it down. I don't know. But I'm very aware of, like, I can't dress too nice on stage.
Don't you see yourself as the performer? People come to see you, so you want to look good. You should be dressed better than the audience, isn't that?
You know what? Jeff Innocent gave me a solid bit of advice when I'd first started, and he said, dress on stage like you would for a first date. So his thing was like, you wouldn't wear a tux for a first date. It's a bit too much, but you still want to look nice enough. Right. And I remember the once it was my mate's 30th, and I'd been out and I went to a gig at Backyard, and it was middle of summer. I had this loud shirt on. And I went and I ate shit. I bombed so hard. And you know, like, people come up to you afterwards and they'll just be like, oh, yeah, good set. They'll just lie to you. Oh, yeah, good set. I was stood outside waiting for a taxi. The only person who came up to me was just some woman who just went, I like your shirt. Since then, I've just been like, nah,
no,
man.
I've never dressed
it's trousers and a t-shirt every night. Can't do it.
Nothing about your set, nice shirt. Yeah, that'll burn me.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I was fuming, and like, I was cheers. Thanks, mate. Horrible.
I think what I've tried to dress down on stage, and then as I'm leaving the house, my missus be like, "You going out like that?" I was like, "Yeah," but you're actually gonna be on stage. It's like, "Yeah, I think you should dress a bit nicer than that." I was like, "Oh." All right, and then I said, put down. At least iron your top. It's like, you're like, okay, what about now? Because that's fine. And then I'm allowed to go out.
But at least she's looking out for your best, isn't it?
Yeah, she's like, you have to look better on stage than that. So,
because it's funny. Usually, I've done smart casual. That's always been my thing. Smart casual.
Yeah, but smart casual is universally the worst dress code in history. Like, smart casual. smart casual. I've said this for years. Smart casual is the easiest dress code to get wrong, but slightly wrong, and you're way off.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, you're either like tux and a pair of trainers. Yeah, that's is that smart casual?
True. That's shortage attire.
Jeans and a blazer. You know what I mean? Jeans and a blazer is technically smart casual, but then you just look like a youth pastor.
If I saw someone with a t-shirt and blazer combo on stage.
Yeah, crazy.
Like, what the fuck are you doing?
It's crazy work.
Even though I would wear that, not on stage, but I would wear that in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
not on stage. I'd be like,
smart casual has always been a bugbear of mine. Is it just a suit without a tie? I don't know.
What? Like, what would I wear? I'll probably wear something like this. I wouldn't wear these crepes, but I wear like actually white Air Forces, and this is like I'll probably wear on stage.
See,
like,
jeans is, I would wear these, but only to a majority white crowd because they're a bit dirty.
Okay, so you will dress differently for a black crowd.
Yeah, like I'll see times where I was like, oh, I can't bother to get my hair cut, and I was like, oh wait, it's a black gig on Saturday. I need to get my hair cut.
Shit, then.
No, I hear that.
Yeah, I was like, they're not going to accept this.
You said it to me before that black crowds find it so odd when I do material for them because I don't have a skin fade. Like, you Darren literally said, if you walked on stage with a skin fade and a tram line in your eyebrow, they'd immediately go,
I understand what's
happening. All right, I've got a friend like this.
It takes them a while. He's got like the Jack Harlow thing going on. Mm. He was like, what the fuck is this? And they start getting into it. He's like, oh shit, no, he knows what's okay. All right, I see. Yeah, he's like, it's true because we have identifiers and markers and stuff.
Of course, yeah.
When I don't have my hair cut, then I play on that on stage. I always tell the joke about my wife being black.
So people know?
No, then I'll joke, go, I know I've got the I like white women haircut. Or like, I just find black women a bit aggressive haircut. Right.
It is that Donald Glover in Community look, isn't it?
And then they prophet just start laughing. It's like, okay, he fully is self-aware of what he looks like to us.
I'm
always aware of how we're here. But then if I'm front of a crowd that's majority white, none of those things even matter at all. It's like there's nothing to even play on. Like they just don't even see it.
Yeah.
That's interesting, man.
Very good, Sarties. Okay, but obviously this is a parenting podcast. Yeah. So, Joe, just so people know, you began how long in comedy?
Just over 3 years now.
3 years.
Longer.
Doing it, no kids that you're aware of.
No kids that I'm aware of now. I thought when you invited me on here that you'd found someone.
That's what it is.
Gonna Jerry Springer me.
Oh my gosh, that is so good.
That's one episode.
That would be so good. Oh god, it's Tanya from Small Hill.
Now I've been doing it on easy difficulty, really, with no kids.
That's right, it's way to do it, man. No kids. But reason I wanted Joe to come on, like, obviously he's friends of the pod, friend of all three of us. I realised last pod we didn't even like acknowledge Kazeem wasn't here.
We just got straight to business.
Kazeem's still part of the pod. He's just working very hard. He's worked very hard.
Providing for his family.
He was on the ship last time.
This time he's gigging up north in Newcastle.
Yeah,
with the Geordies.
Why, man? But reason why we're Joe on is because when we was in Birmingham together, you came to watch him and he started telling a story about just and I thought it was just such an interesting dynamic, because I thought we had Mustin on and he was talking about his parents and stuff, and I thought it's an interesting dynamic. And yeah, I just liked the story and stuff. And it was fucking hilarious. That's not the story.
What about like your family or what?
The problem was that I didn't even really realise, innit? Like I was just, I can't even remember how I got onto the topic of it, but I remember telling this story and it was you, Richard, and Deliso all just went like, is this a bit? Because if it's not, like, you have to do this bit.
We were just holding court in the green room because the stories are so fucking interesting and hilarious. And we were just dying.
And you've never realised this was something.
I've not even thought anything of it before.
I think that's what happens in comedy. Is because it's just your life. It's just what happened. And it's like, no, each extra sentence he said, just dying. Just big Richard Blackwood. It's funny, it's just so. Joe, you grew up with it was your mum and stepdad, and that was the story. It was just that kind of hearing that perspective of, because we've got like Kazeem who's the stepfather, but having that perspective of the child,
are you the only child of your mum?
So it was me. It was me and my mum till I think she met my stepdad when I was 9.
Okay.
Or 9 or 10. And then he didn't have any kids either, so it was just like the three of us. So that's obviously already like quite an intense dynamic. What I mean? Like he's coming in, there's no buffer. He's never been a parent before, and he's also got to handle all the thing of like, oh, but I'm not your dad or whatever. But then it was just quite bizarre ways of then kind of stepping into like, oh, I'm a parental figure eventually.
It's hard to say looking back at yourself. Do you think you were an easy kid to be a step parent to?
Yeah, I think so. Like I was pretty quiet when I was a kid. All I did really was I'd just go out with my mates or play football or whatever. But like I was just really small. I didn't really have a growth spurt until I was like 14. Whereas my stepdad was huge.
Yeah.
Like this guy was like, been like he was in like Team GB Judah
when
he was like 13.
Right.
He like ran his own gym, training all these champion MMA fighters from all over Europe. And then I went to this school when I was like 11. It's like you're joining secondary school, and it was this rough school. All the schools were kind of rough in the area. And he was like, oh, you need to learn how to fight so that you can stick up for yourself. But then rather than send me to like a kid's class, he just made me go to the gym with all of these heavyweight European championship fighters that were like massive.
He's doing it again. He's doing it again.
No, but like...
So you're there fresh face, 11 skinny.
Yeah.
Just drinking milk. That's all you got to.
You know what? That's literally what he did. He made me just drink like whole milk every day.
Farmer's milk.
Yeah, he was like, this is gonna get you to grow big and strong, you know. And then it'd be like, yeah, three times a week, we'd go down to his gym.
Yeah.
And he had this guy. This guy called Spencer. Spencer lives in Brazil now.
Right.
He was the European heavyweight Brazilian jiu-jitsu champion. Jesus. So then he lives in Brazil now because he met his wife, who's Brazilian, doing a convention in Europe and went over there. He had a guy called Rory, this big, like, 6'4" Scottish guy, who he was the heavyweight kickboxing champion, who then went and trained, like, Michael Bisping before he went to the UFC. He had a guy called Tommy, who was literally just an Irish gypsy, who just laid train tracks down, and he got paid by the steel girder. So I only ever saw him drink Red Bull, no water, and he would just get up in the morning and just hammer girders into the ground, and then he'd turn up at our gym doing wheelies on a dirt bike. Just there for the scrap, you know what I mean? Like,
so these were the guys you were fighting as 11-year-olds?
Yeah, yeah, then there was just like a... Then there was just like a load of bouncers from the local area. Loads of the Zulus used to train downstairs because it was a bodybuilding gym downstairs. And a few of them every now and then would come upstairs and they'd be like, oh, do you mind like if we have a bit of a scrap? So then they'd just be there.
People don't know, that's Birmingham City.
The Birmingham City hooligans. So yeah, that was the gym. And it was quite fun, like when I first started going, because they'd be like, you know, just light sparring or whatever. And a bit of like...
Just imagine some flipping European championship just
yeah, but
giving it to that. But this
was the issue.
Would they go easy on you?
Yeah, but like their whole thing would just be like, so you're quicker than us, so you just got to be quick.
Yeah.
So they'd kind of like just let you just buzz around them like a fly, but then they'd swat you away like a fly in the same breath as well. But I think the worst thing that happened for me was the growth spurt. Because I got taller, but I was still just as skinny.
Yes, they thought.
Like, yeah, so all of a sudden, like, I distinctly remember one time I was sparring Rory, the big Scottish guy, and I just caught him with a jab right in the mouth, and I saw his eyes change. Like, he just went into fight mode.
Yeah.
And this, I know he was still only doing like 30%. This man battered me, you know. I got a concussion once because his mate turned up. His mate was like 22 stone, massive. Similar thing. I clipped him, and then I went to move after I'd clipped him straight into his right hook, straight in the temple.
Oh, wow. Do you have any head guards? Oh, shit.
Yeah, gone.
So are you unofficially trained in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, in all of it, yeah.
Mixed martial arts?
Yeah, yeah. And like everyone competed out of this gym.
Yeah.
Did
you compete already?
When I was like a teenager, yeah. But then, because I got a job.
Yeah.
When I was like 18, so I kept doing it then. And then when I was like 21, I had to start like going out and seeing like clients in my old job.
Yeah.
And they were like, "You can't keep doing that with like a black eye and lip all split up and stuff like that." So that's when I packed it in. And I always say to people. Because, you know, like, Elliot Steele does, like, mixed martial arts and stuff.
Yeah.
And I always used to say to him that, like...
Let's have a scrap.
He has said that, like, just come train, innit? But I said to him, like, it was fun when I was doing it, but once you've stopped for a few years, like, you're not in a rush to get hit in the face again.
No.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fun when it's happening, but now I don't miss it at all.
Remember you posted a video the other day about saying the only reason you do it is because you're gay.
Yeah.
He goes, only people do jiu-jitsu and people are gay.
Yeah, you're just rolling around with sweaty men.
You're just rolling around. And people in the comments, it's funny because people just don't take the joke for what it is. Mm. Completely negating the point that he does jujitsu.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's not gay. It's this, this, is this. And the people's like, nah, it's definitely gay. And this guy's like, I'm a three-time black belt. I'm not gay. I just like guys' crotches in my face.
Yeah. It is very gay. I also think I realised the older I got as well, that like, you know, there's that theory of like, as men get older, they just become more autistic.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm convinced that like my stepdad has got like he's got a lot going on. You know yeah. what I mean? Like he'll watch one YouTube video on something and that's his thing now.
Right.
When they moved to Somerset, there's like an old Victorian railway station down the road, and he'll just go on a weekend and look at the steam trains. And I literally said to him, "Like this is a bit too on the nose, this mate. Like I think you've got it, you know." Like, but I think that was the thing with like the cage fighting and stuff. Yeah. It was like he's trying to bond with a kid, and he's like, "Oh well, this is my thing, so I'll just bring him into that." Yeah. Which sounds nice, but like. It's only as I got older and told people that happened to me that people are like, that's fucking mental. Like, you were an 11-year-old child.
Because there's no easing into it. It's not like you're fighting other 11-year-olds. It's like, this guy's a European champion. This guy's trained Michael Bisping. He went on to be an MMA, UFC champion.
Yeah, they're so funny. Like, I remember, like, Tommy the Gypsy, he got sectioned eventually because he was just a mad guy.
Oh, wow.
There was some guy apparently in the area that was like smashing wing mirrors off cars, and Tommy and his brother just went and found this like 13-year-old kid and put him in the boot of the car and just drove him around for an hour just to scare him. Just so he wouldn't do it again. And everyone was just like, he's just telling us in the gym, and everyone's like, sick, yeah. All right, yeah. That's good lad. Hard worker.
Kidnap, you know. Serious.
So this is bonded phase. So you said you was 9. So you start. When did you start going jiu-jitsu?
Like, when I was 11, just started secondary school. Yeah.
You must have known at 9, like what this is, who this man is.
And yeah, then, yeah, yeah, yeah. So
was
like,
that hard to take, or was that?
Nah, not really. I think because it's one of them things, really, where like my dad was around until I was 7, but like not really.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he'd work away a lot. I just don't think he was. That keen on the idea of being a dad, to be fair. Which now that I'm like 32, like he was 30 when he had me, I kind of get it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I kind of had this thing where, again, when I turned 30, I stopped looking at him as like a failed parent. I was like, fuck, yeah, man, if I had a kid now, I think I'd shit the bed as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I get why people go one way or the other.
Do you have any relationship with him now?
Nah, like it's just one of them things where it's just kind of like... You know,
I also,
yeah, it's just too much time's passed, and it also kind of feels like I'd just be like almost ungrateful for like what my stepdad did to almost be like, oh, thanks for all that, but I'm gonna go speak to this guy that I've not seen since I was 7 years old, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't gain anything from it, but you'd hurt other people,
yeah.
So I've just never,
you think your stepdad would be hurt?
I think so. I don't think him or my mum would let on or say anything, but I think. Inevitably, you'd be a bit like, oh, so has it not been enough what I've done? And I've just got nothing to gain from it either. I've got no questions to ask or anything, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, it was... I don't think it was difficult to adjust to. Just because he just seemed like a good guy in it. You know what I mean? Like, he was very... it was always... I think maybe it was just like a dynamic I was happy to have again. And it, like, my mum was always like, oh yeah, we'll still go out and have fun or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think when you're a lad, you want a bloke that's like,
yeah,
we'll go watch the football or we'll go do something, innit?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So yeah, it was all right, to be fair.
No, that's fair. And then do you know how long like your mum and him were dating before you met him? I don't know.
Because they've told me stories since where it's like I just weren't around for them. Like my mum's a pretty dreadful cook, so it was like all the stereotypes about my mates used to say, like, your mum's like a black mum in like the discipline sense. Like I wouldn't say anything back to my mum. I was scared of my mum, all that shit. But very much like a white mum in the kitchen.
That's crazy.
Like,
that's
crazy. I'm not joking.
But you're a single child, so how do you know the food? Not good.
Because I've been elsewhere. You know what I mean? I've left the house. I've been to restaurants and that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to develop my palate.
No, because if there's anything that your mum can't cook, because the only thing my mum can't do is like any beef dish, and I think this is just a general black person thing, is we just cook the shit out of beef. But I didn't,
it's too rough.
But I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I just grew up going, I don't like beef. Yeah. I don't like beef. Why? Because it's too tough. That was my description of beef. Yeah. It's just too tough. I don't really like it.
I don't
taste of anything. And then I think I was on football tour when I was 16. And they just, you know, it's bloody like a squad of 16 of us. Yeah. All right, they get steak and chips, medium. That's it. It's like just not taking, no one's getting individual orders. I remember seeing it was just like all kind of like pink and stuff. I was like, what the fuck's that? Or something. No, you can't have that. And I was like, I'm fucking starving. I remember just putting it in my mouth and just being like, what is that? I was like, what meat is this? They're like, it's beef, it's a steak. I was like,
the old guy from Ratatouille.
Yeah, I was just like, what the fuck? Is this what beef tastes like?
You know what? It's true though. I've never really thought about it before. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of black lads who, like, if they're having steak, it's well done.
Yeah.
They're just like, well done. I can't have it bleeding on my plate. And I'm like, all right.
And then so I don't really, a lot of black guys, I don't really like steak. Mm. Or if they go, I do like steak, and they say, I want it well done. It's like,
yeah, you don't then. You don't respect the art.
Yeah, you don't respect steak. Yeah, we've got too much arrogance to go, we're like the best cooks at everything.
Yeah, no, no, medium, like, no, rare, we're not.
Yeah.
Bang, come on. Yeah, it's got to be juicy suckling.
Yeah,
desserts were shit. Yeah, my mum is a, she still to this day is a pretty dreadful cook though, to be fair. Like, but my stepdad's great. Yeah. Like, so I think that helps.
As well.
Yeah, but I remember like they told a story before of like, obviously I think not like they'd been going out for a bit or something.
Mm.
And, he was always obviously like, he'd still be like running the gym and stuff like that. Yeah. So there were times when she'd be like, all right, well, you can just come here and I'll make some food or something if you want. He's like, all right, cool. So it's like the first time she's been like, yeah, just, you can just come here after the gym and I'll make some food. He gets round there and he says, she's made, it was like a chicken in honey mustard sauce or something.
Right. Sounds right, it's a description.
Yeah, but she's basically like, this man, all he does is eat. Still now, like, he's always eating because he's always been a gym guy. And she said he's just pushing this food around his plate. and she's like, oh, are you not hungry or something? First time she's ever cooked for him. And he just looks at her and apparently he just said, yeah, I'm really sorry, Michelle. This is the most disgusting thing I've ever eaten in my life. Where's your nearest Chinese? And just ordered a takeaway. So, like, the romance was there from early, you know. That was the main thing.
To cook someone food and they don't need it.
There is a parallel universe where the man doesn't have the balls to say
that. Mm.
And he is in a marriage eating shit meals for the rest of his life. So he's like, I've made you your favourite honey mustard chicken.
Yeah.
Thanks, darling.
That man is starving. That man is starving.
You know what I think it is though as well. I think it's something to do with like, because my mum, I see loads of old pictures of my mum and stuff. My mum used to look like blonde, right. So I reckon like she wasn't a stranger to blokes trying to talk to her on nights out or whatever. And I think my stepdad was also also the girl dem sugar, you know what I mean? Yeah. He was on his own for a long time, just living a single man's life. And I think that stood him in good stead.
Yeah.
Because he also had this real habit, and he still does now, of like, it'll be like my mum's birthday or Christmas or something, and they'll go out for a meal, and he'll just start telling some story about, yeah, I remember there was this one bird, man, and like, she came to stay at mine for the week, and then she just wouldn't leave for like days or whatever. And then my mum would just turn it into like, "Wow, that's another birthday ruined, Denny, with one of your stories about your conquests." It's a real bizarre like fabric that they've created in the family dynamic. Yeah, it works for them though. I feel like I know too much about their lives.
Yeah.
You know, which I also think is a very white family thing. Like they do overshare quite a bit.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah, because like I've had to like. Force information out of my mum
about
like, just life
beforehand.
Life just like, as like because I think you do breach this threshold, I think, and I think I implore everyone to do it if they still want their parents in life, just to ask some questions about their life before you existed, or even memories of what you had as a kid, and ask them from like an adult perspective, like, what was actually happening then, because I don't know, I feel like sometimes I know there's a few things that I carried forward into adulthood from memories as a child. Then when I actually asked my mum about it, she was just like, no, that is not how it happened. I was like, what? She goes, no, this happened. I was like, oh, right. Like,
you got the clarity you needed.
Yeah, not go too deep into a story, but I remember I grew up thinking, oh, like, you know, my dad was a bit handsy, like with my mum and stuff. And then I remember bringing this up to my mum and stuff. She goes, what are you talking about? So, that never happened. I was thinking, okay, typical kind of victim. She's remixed it in her head. she goes, how many times did you see this happen? Or do you remember this happen? She goes, twice. And she goes, there you go. And I go, what do you mean? And then she goes, I told him after the first time, if you ever put your hands to me again, that's it. And they go, what happened? I go, yeah, you kicked him out, didn't you? So it's like, oh shit. I go, yeah, I go, I just assume those were the bits I saw. I didn't see anything else. She goes, no, you go, your dad lost his mind twice. And that's what happened. And my mom's like such a forgiving and empathetic person. Like, she's like, no, he wasn't a bad person or anything like that. Because, you know, people lose their temper or whatever. And she goes, but I just wasn't standing for that. So I go, I forgave him the first time and stuff. And then I go, but also specifically remember you also giving it back as well. So I was like, yeah. As goes the second time, I was like, no, it's done. I said, don't do it again. And it's done. I was like, and I thought, if I hadn't asked my mum or brought it up in conversation, I've gone, yeah, because I grew up with a violent dad. Da, da, da. And I would have demonised my dad as well. And it's this thing of, oh no, it was just a human error thing of lost his temper, put his hands on the...
How old were you when this was happening?
So first time was like 5 or something, and then the second time was like 7.
It's interesting to see what kids remember, man.
Yeah, that's the thing. So like, I'm even aware of that now. Like, Zadie keeps on saying to me and Naomi, stop arguing. And me and Naomi are genuinely not arguing.
It's just strong disagreement.
But so we're just laughing, we go, like, it's just how we talk to each other.
It's love.
Yeah. And we wasn't even, wasn't even a deep topic. We were just chatting. Going, nah, but I think this, nah, 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 nah. And Dave's like, stop arguing. And we're just like, we're not arguing. We're not arguing. It's okay. And she's just like, I think you are arguing. But we're like, we're not arguing. We're just disagreeing. Yeah. So it's okay to disagree with someone. But it's like,
of course,
what is going into her mind of going, oh, do my parents argue? They talk very loudly to each other.
I think everything that happens as a kid, though, you like you said, you can remember stuff. Like, for example, I've got what I think is one of my earliest memories. Is me and my dad on like a fairground roller coaster.
Yeah.
But I know it can't be real because in the memory, I bang my head off a steel girder on this roller coaster. So I know it must have been a dream I had when I was a kid.
Or
my brain has just invented it. It's a mad thing. But I think the other thing that I've realised as well is I've become really quite... Having a kid was always a big fear of mine.
Right.
More just in the sense of the lifestyle that I once led.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to have a kid with the wrong person or with a random. Yeah. Okay. Like in my younger years, yeah, now I'm...
we've spoken about this before, just like that. That was the overarching fear. Over any kind of STD, unplanned pregnancy.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's wild how it becomes like, you go to a point where you're a young man, you don't want to practice, then you find someone you want to be with, then sometimes you want to get pregnant, or especially you want to time it, like when we had our first kid. Now we're like, we don't want the gap to be too big. Now it's like, get pregnant. And there was a time in my life where pregnancy was, it just fear, you think your life's over.
Getting a message from a girl saying, oh, I'm late, it's like, and then it's just like flash forward into your life. I remember being at uni and getting that text from a girl. I was like, I'm literally second year of uni. It's like, wait, that means I'm going to have a kid before I even finish uni.
You will end up in McDonald's.
Did you pray? Because I'm not joking. I had this one girl who sent me a message, and she was so unhinged. I prayed. I haven't been to church since I was like 10 years old, I reckon. once the Irish Catholic guilt had left my mum, and she was like, "You've been christened, you've been confirmed. It's on you now." I haven't been back, but I knelt at the side of my bed. I did it. Old Testament prayed. I was like, nah.
God, are you there? Still saved up for?
And you know, you start like making like deals with him, like he's the devil. I was there. I was like, listen, I'll fix everything up. Yeah, I'm never gonna do this again. Please. As soon as she messaged me to say nah, it's all good, I was back out in the streets.
You learned no lesson.
Yeah, I was like, listen, God help me, he wants me to be happy, man.
I remember this, that girl I was talking about particularly, she ended up being a girlfriend in the end. So it's like, it wouldn't have been ideal, but in that frame of mind at the time, it wouldn't have been the worst. In hindsight, it wouldn't have been great for time, obviously. But no, but yeah, I've definitely been there where it's like, not this one, please.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one.
Was that one just an incorrect test, or did she obviously go have an abortion?
Nah, I don't think any of it was true. Well, like, she was genuinely very insane. Yeah. Which I was just drew to in my younger years. You know, it seemed exciting.
Did you think that would lead to better intercourse? Was that your thinking?
Nah, like, I just found them. Yeah, I just found them more exciting. I know that's a thing of like, oh, it's crazy, so you know it's going to be mad.
Yeah.
Nah, not necessarily. Not necessarily. It's a story that I've told a lot of people. I don't think I've ever told it on a podcast. I've definitely never told it on stage. But I had a girl who I was with for about 6 months. Who like she got possessed one night. So that was like the most crazy.
This guy's story.
Yeah, and like
what? Like by a spirit of some sort. And then, well, she'll be controlled by this spirit.
Yeah. So it's a really long story. But like the long and short of it is she kind of told me that like, oh, she's a spiritualist and she does all these readings and stuff and can speak to spirits and stuff like that.
Before she said this, what was your belief system? Did you believe in spirits?
Nah, like I said, I was raised Irish Catholic.
Yeah.
But I think just through familial habit.
Yeah.
It was never really pushed on me or anything. Yeah. And then the older I got, my thing just became like, if someone wants to believe in something, that's their business. Because in my opinion, it's all saying the same thing. It's all saying just be nice to people and you'll be all right.
Yeah.
But I was more like, well, that is enough
for
me. I'll just do that. Just try not to be a knobhead. So I didn't really have a belief system that strong. But what I did do, I went to this, she went to like a spiritual church.
Yeah.
And I went with her a few times to watch her do these things. And by the end of it, I still didn't believe it.
Yeah.
But I just said to her, I said, it's your business if you want to carry on doing it. And and she was like, yeah, okay, cool. And then she told me, she was like, oh, it's just that sometimes like I don't just get the nice spirits. I'm like, yeah, all right, sick, whatever.
This guy loves crazy.
And I remember she lived with her parents and her brother.
Yeah.
And I was staying around there the one night because I had a football game. She lived by Coventry and had a football game over that way. I'm staying there. The only way I've ever described it to people is, you know, when you wake up in the night, you've gone to sleep next to your partner. You wake up and without rolling over, you know they're not there anymore. Yeah. You just know the bed's empty. So I woke up with that feeling middle of the night, but I roll over, she's still there, just sat bolt upright. And I keep saying her name and asking if she's all right. Nothing. She's just laughing, like quietly.
Whose house was this, yours or
hers? At hers. Like at her family house. So eventually I'm like, what's going on, man? Said her name, and it just goes like, nah, she's not here. That's what she said.
Was it her voice?
Yeah, but it sounded a bit weird, but I just thought she might be a bit croaky, ain't it, middle of the night. I thought, fuck this. Jumped out of bed, turned the light on, and she's just staring at me. She's not blinking, just laughing. So me being a dickhead, I was like, well, if it ain't you, who the fuck is it then? So she leans down to the side of the bed, gets this glass of water, and just dashes it, smashes off the wall. I thought, fuck this. When I got a brother goes in the room. I shit you not, he goes, go upstairs, get my mum, tell her to bring the rosary beads down. She comes...
So this is... So that would fuck me up because like, oh, is this just standard procedure?
This is what
pissed me
this is what pissed me off.
They've got
like,
a rescue plan. This is just,
And it gets worse. And I go upstairs and mum goes, oh my God, grabs the thing out the drawer, goes downstairs. And then her dad's just sat in bed just going, I remember the first time I saw it. So it shook me up as well. So now I'm downstairs, like, you know, like when your mate's getting told off by the parents, so you just like play with the dog. I'm just like dustpan and brushing the glass up, watching what's going on.
Exorcism.
But she's screaming while these rosary beads are getting put on her and stuff like that. She snaps out of it eventually. So I went back the week after to run an experiment. So I put a film on about possession.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened again. Like, just got a weird feeling. My mum was like, yeah, it's happening again. But this time she was screaming all sorts. She was like, I'm going to hurt him if he stays here. So I just dipped, never went back. That was the craziest. But she was an exotic dancer. And and I remember I told the lads at football.
There needs to be some upside.
Nah, because I remember I told my pals at football what had happened and that I'd left there, and they all sat there after the story in the pub and just went, yeah, I probably wouldn't have left her though still. I was like, yeah, right, cheers.
Fucking hell. What would be your explanation of that behaviour? Because me, I'm just like, that's a mental health crisis happening there.
Yeah, I think she had like non-diagnosed schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And her family weren't helping by almost encouraging the narrative of like, oh, her granddad had the gift as well. The last message, the last message that I sent to her mum was like, whatever you believe is fine, but you should take her to a doctor.
If you're having like auditory or visual hallucinations and dissociations and stuff like this, I'm like, what the
fuck? Best case, carbon monoxide poisoning in that yard, do you know what I mean?
That is wild.
Yeah, so obviously because these were the partners that I was choosing, I was always very scared about getting someone pregnant. And But now that I'm older, I think I'm like, one, I don't know if I will have kids.
Yeah.
I think I'd like the idea of potentially having them at some point.
Yeah.
But I think because of like my childhood now, I'm more determined now to, my focus is more like, oh, I just want to have kids now. My focus is like, oh, I want to be a good dad though.
I see, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I think that's a good priority because I think a lot of people probably don't have that, right? It's just a thing of, it's like same as marriage. So I think a lot of people want a wedding.
Married. Yeah, but actually stay married.
But yeah, to stay married. Married, I think,
is a completely different
thing. Yeah, I think it's the same parenthood, right? I've joked about it on stage going that I like being a dad, but I fucking hate parenting.
Mm.
It's not that parenting's as long. But
most of my friends have got kids different age. Some of them got kids that are in secondary school now and all sorts. But like, it does just look from the outside in like a list of jobs that only ever grows. Like, you could have the most productive day. There's still 10 extra things to do at the end of it. It just never ends.
100%.
No, and the upside of it is all, like, it's all psychological. It's all...
Oh, yeah.
Self-fulfilling. There's no external objective upside to having kids, I don't think. I think it's got to be a narrative that you've told yourself, told your partner, they've told you, and you've bought into this narrative.
It's a project, and, isn't it?
Yeah, you've bought into this narrative because it's like, there are these moments and it's just like, oh, that is really fun, that's nice, and that's nice to get the hug and all those kind of cute things. But from the objective things, like, I'd be able to live my life without that hug. Just like it's... wouldn't die.
But then when you look at it, like you said there, is like when you said like it is a project, you're immediately given this person, it's like you're only gonna cost me money.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've got to keep you alive. Can you therefore see why these people get into business like Project Mbappe now, where these people are like, I'm gonna make my kid the best footballer in the world.
They want to return on investment.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it must cross your mind to be like, you know what I mean, I'm at least putting my kid into drama school. I'm going to try and get him to become this big actor.
I can imagine just the excitement you must get if you see some raw talent in your child. You see them do something. You're like,
Yeah, like it must turn you into Joe Jackson, innit?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's just true. Yeah, no one's ever saw it from Joe Jackson's perspective.
I've always thought with Joe Jackson, yeah, he's looked at them kids and thought, someone's going to make money out of this. Yeah, yeah. I'll be the one to do it. And I've always thought with Joe Jackson as well that his issue is it becomes like his actions become like a self-fulfilling prophecy where everyone's like, you're pushing him too hard. But he's always like, yeah, but look at the results. You know, so like you can't tell him anything.
Dude, well, the issue with Joe Jackson was, or with the Jackson family, was that Michael wasn't the firstborn. If Michael was the firstborn, then the rest could have been allowed to just be like accountants and like bin men and stuff. They would have been cool because he would be like, I got Michael. But because the rest are in it. Because
he had to do with Tito and them.
Yeah, because in it, it's just like, fuck. Just like, Jermaine, yeah, I got a guitar. It's like, Tito, you play drums.
Tito's just spinning in the background.
And he's just there, it's like, this fucking band's just shit. And then Michael's bored, he's just like, boom, we've got it. And there's part of him just like, fuck these kids, we've got Michael. And then the missus must be like, you can't just leave the other boys out. they're in it now, they don't have any other skills now. Because he's like, oh, fine, they're the Jacksons.
Yeah, begrudgingly, yeah. But you think you get Michael about all the, I'm not going to call them failures, but all the...
You were saying Michael's like Joe Jackson's like Jackson V5. Yeah, like
he's the top version. Like they're all like prototypes and then he's like the main final version. He's having a Dyson V15 and then a Dyson V8. Like they're like earlier versions that didn't quite hit the heights. But you don't get... I don't think you get Michael about the others though.
Things. I mean, yeah, but I mean, yeah, potentially. You know what I mean?
Refining all that type of stuff. Having older siblings that do that, you look up to them, you learn from their mistakes, and
yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like Andy Murray's brother. He only plays doubles with Andy.
Yeah, that's true.
He ain't doing nothing else.
Because Jamie's older than Andy, is he?
I think so. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
And you get it with loads of like footballing brothers as well, don't it? Yeah. Where like one's sick, and then the other one's just like
very rare.
Yeah.
Kevin Prince, Jerome.
Yeah, exactly. Sean Wright Phillips, Bradley Wright Phillips.
Yeah. Gary Phil, yeah.
Well, I was listening over that. Gary was actually saying that Phil
was a better player.
Was the better player.
Well, Gary's very humble.
No, but when it comes to football. No, but he gave an explanation as to why he became the better player. So he wasn't just, it wasn't just pure humble. He was saying that I think Phil got like meningitis or something. Like when he 2 or 21.
Why is he sabotaging his brother?
No, but he was saying that, yeah, because obviously Phil had the versatility where he could play.
Yeah, play both fullback.
But he was saying that Phil was actually like bigger than him. Mm. He was like physically stronger, but then he had meningitis and lost weight, and he's like he couldn't put it back on. And he said, so Phil gave like just that slighter build, and he said that he just kicked on. We love that.
It's not the meningitis.
What's it?
I just thought of another footballing brother combination where the older ones are failure. It's Wayne and Gary Lineker. Gary Lineker's playing for Barcelona in England. Wayne Lineker's just fucking 18-year-olds. Oh man, I had to go out to Ibiza for my mate Stagdo, and I met Wayne for the first time this year. Yeah, man, and I didn't know he was behind me. I'm just chatting to my pal, and he's right there. And I turned around, I'm like, oh shit. I said, you're right, Wayne, how you doing? He goes, yeah, you're right. I said, how's Gary? And he said, oh, well, you know, Gary's got match of the day. I've got snatch of the day. I had no words for that man. You know, so part of me looked at him and was like, how many people have you said that to today, man? That is... Someone wrote that for him.
He's a real villain. Do you know what you must meet someone like that and think, are you the personality you're purported to be? And
yeah.
He's like, right, yeah, he is.
You are actually, yeah.
That's crazy.
You are him.
Yeah, so to be fair, there was a point where I'd been in Ocean all day at this point. Sun's out, tunes are on, you know what I mean? Loving a pool party. And one of my mates just saw him spraying champagne on people from a stage and went, oh, could you live that life though? I just looked around and was, yeah. Probably, yeah.
Seems pretty easy.
Yeah, he seems quite happy actually. Yeah.